This is Amateur Logic, episode 218, for June 19th, 2026. Amateur Logic is brought to you by ICOM. From rugged HF base stations to ultra-reliable handhelds, ICOM radios deliver the performance, durability, and clarity field day demands. Good evening. Welcome to another action-packed episode of Amateur Logic. I'm George.
I'm Tommy.
I'm Emil.
And I'm Mike.
And it's great to be back with you on another Friday night, June the 19th. It's actually Juneteenth today.
Yep.
So, Tommy and I really didn't have a holiday today because we're retired now. So
every day is a holiday.
Yeah. You could look at it that way.
Rub it in.
Yeah.
It just means we're old, Emil.
I'm trying to catch up.
Yeah. You'll get there.
All right.
Wow. It's been raining and raining and raining, and it's a tropical rain. Although it's 82 degrees out there, with the humidity, it feels like it's 102,
doesn't
it? It
is steamy, man. When you walk outside, the glasses just steam up. Everything, it just feels like a sauna out there.
Yep. Email, has it been wet down there?
Yeah. 2 days. 1 day, 7 inches of rainfall. Yesterday, 9. It's ridiculous here, actually. But we just got to tie everything down that's going to float away. It's bad when the gutter diffusers float away.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. How about the new cheap old shack? Is it above water?
It is above water. It's draining. Stuff is draining right around it and going where it should go. So
that's good.
Yep.
Very good. So you know now you can take a pretty good gully washer.
That's right. A big one.
Well, Mike, what's been going on up that direction?
Well, it's been cooler, thankfully. We had a bit of a heat wave for a while, and temperatures were in the high 80s and high humidity, and of course it felt like it was in the 90s, but we're down to, actually we're below seasonal norm right now. It's been really nice. I wish it was like this year round. It gets about 72 degrees Fahrenheit during the day and goes right down to about 62 at night. So we're actually going to dip down into the 50s overnight here tonight. So it's been enjoyable. Weather. Yeah.
So is that like a precision clock behind you there?
That is a precision clock. And I don't know, I'm not up on my periodic table, but I think CS represents cesium, if I'm not mistaken.
Cool.
Ooh.
Tommy, what's been going on?
Tinkering around with a bunch of projects around home. Got some interesting batteries from Field Day. Not Field Day, from Hamvention. I got Field Day on the brain.
Yeah.
Anyway, from Hamvention, I've been playing around with those a little bit. They're kind of interesting.
Interesting.
Yeah, a little bit. Kind of interesting, but a little disappointing at the same time. My segment's about it, so we'll see about it a little bit more shortly.
Okay. All right. I've been working on some projects, too, and some exploration, and that's what I'll be looking at tonight.
Exploration or exploration?
A little bit of both. Yeah. Probably like those batteries you got over there.
Yeah. Probably so.
Anyway, I guess we ought to get on into it. You said something about Field Day a minute ago.
Yeah, Field Day's coming up this weekend.
Wow. I hadn't even
Field Day already?
Tested my radios or anything yet.
Just going to remind everybody, Field Day's coming up. It's June 27th and 28th. If you're not familiar with Field Day, it's basically go set up your gear outside typically and for emergency preparedness type things. The objective is to contact as many stations as possible on 160, 80, 40, 20, 15, and 10 meters. It's open to licensed hams in the area covered by the ARRL or the RAC, which is the Radio Amateur of Canada. But if you don't have somebody to go to field day with, you can go to this website here. These links will be in the show notes. This one's ARRL.org field-day-locator. And you can see a map of the area, see who's where they got the field day sites registered. And they're very welcoming. If you want to get on there, go, somebody help you get on there, license, or take your gear out there and set up with them and have a good time.
Yep.
If you want to know how to contact somebody, find out where they are, just click on one of these pins near you.
Tomorrow or Sunday, I need to start pulling out the gear here and making sure I've got connectors on both ends of all of my coax and
batteries everything. Charged up. You're batteries taking batteries. Charged. I got to recycle my big battery that I made.
Recycle it.
Cycle it. I got to charge it and recharge it so the percentage meter reads right, because I noticed I haven't used it. I don't think I've used it since last field day, and it's not reading the right percentage.
Okay. All right. Well, I guess let's get on into it tonight. You were talking about that battery there. Do you want to set it up or just knock it over?
No, let's just knock it over and talk about it when it comes back.
All right.
Come back. If you watched our last Amateur Logic, where we covered the hamvention stuff we saw when we were out there, or at least lost some of it, you see that I talked to a guy that was building some mesh-tastic devices and mesh core devices. He also had some soda core batteries he was selling there. Well, I got a couple of them. He gave me these two. Thanks to him for letting me have them. But I want to test them out and we'll do a little better comparison against some lithium ion batteries later. But I just want to see what the discharge curve looks like on these things. And to do that, I got a new little toy I was going to introduce you to. I got this little ZK E-Tech battery tester and electronic load. It's a EBC A20 model. It'll load up to 20 amps to test the capacity, and it'll also charge up to 5 amps. It came with a cable. It's a TTL USB cable. Then has some software. It works pretty good. So we're going to give it a try today. It's my first time to really use it other than just playing around with it a little. I've got the batteries here. I've got a 18650 holder. This one's a little bit heavy duty. I had some of those with the small wire, and I played with it yesterday trying to get used to using the device, and it melted the negative side of where the spring touched. So I ordered some better ones. I've got a little thermometer here. We're going to keep an eye on things, make sure things don't get hot. Cable, and then I'm going to hook it up to my laptop here. It came with a power supply. This is more like a laptop supply. It's 19 volts, 4.74 amps. Give it a try and see what this battery looks like. Let's take a look at the battery here. It's a SodaCore battery. The brand is. It's powered by NA Plus, 3 volt, rechargeable 18650 lithium ion battery. So it's not lithium ion, it's sodium ion. That's weird. NFPP 900 milliamp hours. There's a website on here, SodaCore.com. I went there to see if I could find a data sheet to get the charge and discharge specs for it. Capacity and everything, and website doesn't exist. So I checked Copilot for it. It doesn't show up anywhere. So maybe these are really old batteries there when they first started experimenting with them and the company's now defunct. I'm not really sure. Got the device hooked up to the USB port on the computer. Hooked up to the back of the device. Got the leads hooked up to the proper positive or negatives based on the red and the black. I've got the positive on the battery hooked up there, the negative hooked up there on that tab. So we should be good to go. You can see on the screen we've got a voltage here, 2.171. So let's go ahead and set up our charge. We'll set this to charge, constant currents and voltage. The voltage is going to, the current's going to be, I think it said 0.45, which is half a C, 0.5 C, 0.45. And the voltage is going to be 3.7. Max voltage that we want to go to. And the cutoff current is going to be 0.2 amps. And let's click start. You can see I've got a different suit of clothes on. This is 2 days later. I started on Saturday morning and I was there till about 11:30 Saturday night trying to get this first one to work right and testing, trying to figure out what was wrong, if it was my methodology or the battery. Still not 100% sure what was going on, but I got kind of weird results with this one. It would work fine. It charged up okay, and then all of a sudden it would discharge and it like kind of dumped a whole bunch of energy out somehow. I don't know how that can happen. But it got hot, really hot. So I put the other one in, the second battery, it's marked number two here by me. And it worked perfectly. Didn't quite get the 900 milliamps out of it that it's supposed to have had. Again, the first one I started out, I discharged it down to 2 volts before I charged it so I could see the full charge curve. The other one, I was pretty tired, so I just went ahead and just took it as whatever it shipped at, so which is apparently 3 volts. And it's rated as a 3-volt battery. So let's take a look at the curve here for the charge. Started off at 3 volts right here. Begin volts are 3 at the bottom. Cutoff volts 3.7. That's what we put in. We used 0.45 for the current that we were going to put into it, 450 milliamps. And the voltage just kind of climbs across here till it gets to 3.7 volts, and then it's going to turn off. And that's what happened. So we started off here. You can tell there's a little bit of an incline here, but it's still in the 3-volt range. Not that bad. 3.15 right here at about 20 minutes in, roughly 21 minutes in, and then it starts climbing up a little bit steeper, kind of flattens out a little bit around here at 35-ish minutes, goes down, and then all of a sudden, well, let's take a look here how much current we've got here. If we right click on this, we can see it's 3.213 volts at 409 milliamp hours, and still at 1.28 watt hours. It's still going up. It gets over here, then all of a sudden it shoots up a lot. I don't know how it can put that much current in that battery that fast. Let's go take a look at the discharge curve now. Let's open the discharge curve. Open discharge battery 2. Fine. Okay, so we can see after it settled for a little while, I'll let it sit for a bit, maybe 20 minutes or so, maybe a little longer, and it settled down to 3.381. You can see down at the bottom down there, 3.381, and it fell off pretty fast within 27 minutes. Took a while for this to run. 27 minutes, it was at 3.139. Pretty flat for the most part. Not super flat, but it's not terrible. But once it gets about right in here, it starts falling off a lot. It gets below 3 volts. So we were at 3 volts all the way up until around here. 2 hours and maybe 20-ish minutes in. And then it starts falling down below 3 volts. And then it just really drops off really fast, which is close enough for me. But it used 820 milliamp hours of capacity, which that's not quite the capacity rated on the batteries, and I'm kind of would expected that. So the concerning thing for me is what the voltage range. So it goes down to 2 volts or right around right here. 9.5, that's probably right there where that line is, 2 volts. So that's a pretty wide voltage swing. Let's see if we can find one of the regular lithium ion curve. So here is a lithium ion. I just had Copilot just pull me one from the web, And this is a good one. It's gentle slope off at the front, kind of plateaus for a good while, and has relatively stable voltage, and then drops off really sharp at the end. I'm not quite sure what to think about these batteries just yet. It's a huge voltage drop off after about you've used a little bit more than half of the battery capacity. How would you deal with that? Just cut off at certain voltage and just ignore the rest of the capacity of the battery, or limit the voltage for your project and have more batteries? Then it's not very practical either. I'm not really sure. So I'd be interested in other people's thoughts on how you would deal with using something like this. I haven't really found a ready-made charger, and I haven't found a lot of the batteries for sale yet either, like at least on Amazon. Most of the ones that I've seen are pretty expensive, about the same price as the lithium-ion batteries. The major saving thing for these is they're supposed to be tons safer than the lithium batteries. So that's promising. I know they're supposed to be the battery of the future, but I'm not sure it's my future yet. So anyway, be interested to hear your thoughts on it. 73.
So they're interesting, but I don't think they're quite ready for prime time. Actually, I don't know that the capacity will get any better, the discharge curve. I imagine that's just what it is because of the chemistry. But how would you deal with that? Because you're going to lose a lot of your capacity. If you had something that's 3.2 volts, and it's good till like 3 volts, which most things are, or a little bit less, but it's good. The battery discharges all the way down to 2 or 1 point something volts. I mean, how would you handle that with your project? Make sure you had enough current voltage to.
I guess you'd have to make your project shut down when it got.
Yeah, then so you're going to lose like half of your capacity of your battery. So this 900 battery would be like the same as a 450, which is about what you get out of a AAA alkaline battery.
Really? It's not very good.
The regulation and the buck boost, yeah, you'll wind up sucking it down, huh?
Yeah. So anyway.
Tommy, I was looking at the curve there. You know how it shot right up, that one chart you showed where it shot right up? I'm just wondering, it'd be interesting if you could read the internal battery resistance to see if the resistance of the battery is changing to permit that current flow to go.
Yeah, I think you can like that. See that on that thing. I'm gonna do a segment on that tester I got on itself sometime soon, maybe next few months, maybe, and look at that. But I believe you can see that in there. I'd have to go back and look, double check.
Sure is a nice tester, Tommy.
Yeah, it's pretty nice. I like it.
You need to buy one at Mill.
I'm not gonna ask how much it is.
It was just a little over $100. It's not that bad.
Nice.
Well, email, you may not have an email tonight, but I've got one that has your name on it.
You sure do. And, you know, Professor Thomas, you sure have been talking a lot about testing things. And for us in the South down here, it's hurricane season, so we're watching. That email you're showing there is something I sent to you using a tactic that we practice down this way. Field days, perfect days to practice these things, and other times like simulated emergency tests. But that email was sent to you via HF, really? George, in the WinLink system. So it's a pretty common thing for us. It's time to test our equipment. And we're going to see a little bit about that later from me. But the interesting part of this is there's a tactic I use here that both the clubs and the EOCs here, we all use it when we're sending that kind of an email out to each other. Even we're inside of the impacted area, usually, if we're using this stuff. And the idea is to find that next hop out away from you. Well, if all of our infrastructure within a 200-mile radius is out because we just got blasted by a hurricane, we look for stations on the WinLink networks via multiple protocols that are further than that out, and we all serve off of them. So when we're in the impacted area, we go out to send it out, and then all the people who are inside also go out to receive the messages. So an interesting tactic, it works, but now is the time to test it. And there's the logs from the station that I sent you that message on earlier today. It's 355 miles out, W0MAC, which is in Spring, Texas. They claim to be one of the first HF Windlink gateways out there. And also the station itself is a club that uses this gateway to honor a fallen Coast Guard who died in the line of duty. So really interesting people out there on these networks, guys. If you pay attention, you'll find a lot of information and good people out there who are volunteering their equipment and time. So what I'm telling y'all is now is the time to test this stuff. Good stuff.
Is that a function of Windlink to automatically redact messages?
No, I redacted it. That's just the password, the logarithm for the over-the-air password. I did that, Mike.
Cool.
It's not encrypted or obfuscated because you can't do that, but it is jumbled up and, you know, compressed and all other fun stuff. So I redacted it.
Nice.
So what band did you send that on?
That was 40 meters, George, at around 5 p.m. tonight. The signal level was very low, but the message made it through. There were times when I could not hear it, but the computer was still getting the acknowledgments. It could still hear it below the noise floor, which is, that's phenomenal to me.
Yeah. Yeah, that is. Well, I've got I guess it's a project, but it's exploration as well. RN Noise is an open-source, deep learning-based noise suppression library created by Mozilla and ZIF.org. It acts as a real-time neural network designed to remove background noise like fans, hums, clicks, and hiss, while keeping human voices sounding natural and clear. It's AI-powered using a recurrent neural network specifically trained on voice and non-voice sounds. It's highly efficient, lightweight, and does not require heavy GPU processing. Depending on the implementation, there are versions available for Linux, Windows, and Mac OS. I'm going to be trying it today with a Raspberry Pi 5. I'm going to need an external audio device, so I'm using a Scarlett 2i2 USB audio device. I'm taking audio out of the rig, going into the input of the audio device, and the output of the audio device is going to an amplifier and speaker here that I can listen with. There are two programs I'm going to need on the Pi to do this with. The main thing I'm wanting to use is RN Noise. You can't run that by itself. You need something to host it. The program that we're using for that is Easy Effects. We'll load it up. We see there is some input coming to it, but there's nothing on the output. I've added some effects here. Compressor, deep noise remover, noise reduction, which this one is RN Noise, and reverberation, just to play with. I'll turn on the effects. Still got input, but nothing going to the output, so we can't hear anything coming out of the speaker. We'll need a program to route and patch the audio around where it should be for this application. The program I'm going to use is called Helvium, H-E-L-V-U-M. You can search the internet, find out where you can download that, how to install it. It wasn't very difficult. Now, we got to patch some things around. We'll take the Capture FL from the Scarlett, run it into the Easy Effects source. We'll do left and right channels. Then the Capture FL out of the Easy Effects source will run into Easy Effects Sync Playback FL over here. And we'll do the left and the right. Now we can see something happen on the output there. That's the audio we're hearing right now with no noise reduction at all in the rig or on the computer. Those guys are pretty weak, and there's a lot of lightning tonight. The net control's a little louder.
Yeah, have a great evening. WA4YPN, God bless you in 73, W4FCW.
Let's engage the noise reduction here. toggle it on.
All right, let's get Mike here. KC5YWN. Time there, Mike.
All right there, Kurt. Thanks for picking me up, W4FCW and three-wheeler. KC5YWN. No, good evening. Again, all out there, Wild Bill and Pop, Jimmy, and Mr. Jim.
Let's turn it off and listen to it. That'll get old pretty fast. All of RN Noise's noise reduction functions happen on your local machine. One thing I want to point out here is RN Noise has been pre-trained with sounds like office noises, room noises, sounds from the street, various things like that. It is not trained on radio interference. There is a derivative of RN Noise called RM Noise that runs on your local machine, but uploads your receive signal to a server over the internet. There, the noise reduction process happens, and the cleaned signal is sent back to your local computer for listening. The latency depends on the speed of your computer and internet connection, but is typically very low. In my case, it was considerably under 1 second. Let's take a look at it. It has been trained with noise from a lot of different radio sources. Let's see how it fares. Now, the signals we'll be listening to here are going to be a little stronger, not quite as weak. That net that we were listening to a moment ago has ended now. So we're just taking a conversation that's on the air. And it's close to midnight here, so there's not as many people talking. And the ones that are, I have pretty good signal on. So there's the noise coming in. On the graph, we've got it set to original. So it's pretty noisy tonight. A lot of lightning in the area. There's a tropical storm down in the Gulf, so not the best night to be listening to 80 meter HF.
At a 1500,
3CX
1500, Tom.
Oh, wow, three of them. Good Lord.
Two, I'm sorry, two.
It's got two transformers.
I had to put a second line, 240 line in the shack.
It requires two 240 lines. It has two separate transformers. 6K on the dummy load, over.
Oh, that's great. Well, I got two 240s here at 50 amps each, so maybe I should give that one a shot.
Yeah, Roger.
Well, if you get the A, it's about 10 grand.
Better ask your wife if you can spend that money.
Yeah, you're right. I dropped that kind of coin. You know I got to ask her.
Now I'm going to bypass it, and we'll use the normal style DSP that's in most rigs.
Oh, no kidding. Well, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, the radio that you're on sells number one.
Now, to be fair, I could turn the noise reduction amount way up on the rig and take a lot more of the noise out, along with a lot of the audio.
500 and 1,000, nobody would ever notice the difference.
Yeah, you know, you're probably right. Even if fans flopping up and down, it still wouldn't hit that much.
But there's a big noticeable difference between 500 and 1,005, though.
Roger.
Both of these technologies are using deep learning and recurrent neural networks to do AI training for noise reduction. The big difference, RN Noise is originally distributed as a DLL, and it needs some kind of host application to run it. That's the reason we were using EasyFX for that task on the Raspberry Pi. There are likely other applications you could use instead of that. RM Noise currently has a Windows application you run on your PC. It captures the audio coming from your rig, uploads it to a server across the internet, processes the audio, does the noise reduction, and returns the audio to you for listening. RN Noise was trained using common household noises and office noises. RM Noise was trained using different samples from different people's radios with different types of noises. So it's better suited for reducing noises from radio signals. So my next experiment may be capturing noises locally here on my radio, letting RN Noise train on them, thereby creating a library of noise samples and processing that fits best with my radio and my typical noise here. And it would all be self-contained, runs locally. Either way, this is very easy to try. If you're currently running FT8 or any of the digital modes with your radio and computer, then you're already set up to use RN or RM noise. So why not give it a shot?
Wow.
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah, I've never heard something that could deal with static crashes so well.
It is amazing. I mean, some of that was 80 meters, and, you know, this is why that tropical storm is down in the Gulf.
That was a lot of lightning, too, I can tell you.
You could listen to that. I mean, otherwise, you get wore out pretty quick, but turn that on. Yeah, the audio quality is not quite as good, but man, the noise reduction is phenomenal.
It made up for it. You could hear it clear as day. Yeah. I mean, it wasn't a big problem.
Yeah, and you could adjust it because I didn't go into any of the details there, but there are some adjustments in there you can make to kind of tailor it to what you're listening to at the time. But I've been using it regularly, particularly this time of year. Now, you know, if you got a good quiet environment on a band any particular time, if you can listen to it without noise reduction, that's my preferred way. But most of the time, you don't find that in the summer, especially.
Not 80 meters.
Or not on any band, really. Yeah. 80 is the worst, though.
Yeah.
40 had some.
20 is my preferred band. Yeah. It's usually pretty clean for me, too.
Yeah, but it was kind of noisy the last couple of days.
Yeah, it was.
So anyway, yeah. I suggest check it out. I noticed a comment from Francis there. I'd like to see free DV become more popular and built into rigs. Yeah, I've been playing with free DV, too. We'll be talking about that in the future. But I ran across this. Now, I knew it was out there. I've used RN Noise before. And as a matter of fact, if you have one of the SDR Play radios and you're using SDR Connect, the noise reduction in SDR Connect is RN Noise. And apparently they have trained it on radio interference because it does a pretty decent job. But the RM noise, I think the advantage they've got there is the guy has a server set up and people are submitting samples from their radios. And he wants at least 30-minute long files from you with no voice, just noise. And so he's captured up a bunch of these over a period of time. He's got a pretty good idea of what's noise and what's not. So yeah, that's why it's so effective, I believe.
It's really amazing. I might have to play with that. I got a Pi sitting there right by my rig, runs all the time. Need to route some audio into there.
Well, that's RN noise. All right. But RM noise is the one that gave the best performance. But you can train RN noise. I just haven't gone down that rabbit hole yet. But I will when I've got time to do it. It's very interesting technology. Came out, I think, around 2018.
It's old.
Yeah. Yeah.
Modern standards.
Yeah. So, you know, if you can learn a machine to get the noise out for you, Emil.
We need to learn them something.
Learn them. Yep. So I got to learn mine on my noise. Anyway, I'm very happy with what I heard.
Yeah.
There.
Yeah. Imagine so. That's really good.
Very impressive.
We'll be back in just a moment. Don't go away.
Summer's on the horizon, and for amateur radio operators, that means one thing. Field Day is almost here. Mark your calendars for June 27 and 28 when hams across the country head outdoors, fire up their rigs, and put their skills to the test. Whether you're logging contacts from a remote site or contesting with a club, ICOM has the gear to keep you connected competitive, and in control. From rugged HF base stations to ultra-reliable handhelds, ICOM radios deliver the performance, durability, and clarity field day demands. As the days get longer and the bands heat up, make sure you're ready with a radio that works as hard as you do. The ICOM IC705 brings portable performance to operators who want HF, 50 MHz, VHF, and UHF capabilities beyond the shack. Compact, lightweight, and multi-mode, it supports single sideband, CW, RIDI, AM, FM, and D-Star DV, giving hams the flexibility to operate from a field day site, a campsite, a park, or a compact contest station. For contesting and field day, the IC705 is an excellent choice because it combines portability, operating versatility, and real-time band awareness. Its spectrum scope and waterfall display help operators find activity quickly, while its broad mode and band coverage support a wide range of contacts. Whether used as a club setup or a personal portable station, the IC705 delivers capable ICOM performance when every contact counts. Heard it, worked it, logged it. For more information about ICOM's amateur radios, visit icomamerica.com/amateur today.
Thanks, ICOM.
I'll third that.
Tommy, we were talking about battery testers a moment ago. Is there
something? Yeah, I wanted to mention something. Somebody in the chat, I think it's Collar Radio. I think that's Jay, if I'm not mistaken. But anyway, he asked for the link for the battery tester. But if you go, it doesn't come with the software on the disc. You have to download it. But if you go to the manufacturer site, be careful because when I try to get that file, when his machine went off like crazy, it had a virus. So I found this different one. So be careful about that if you go get the software. I did email them about it, but I haven't heard anything back. Maybe fixed, may not be. So, but you can go to offgridgarage.com, I think it is, or Google Offgrid Garage, and that guy's got it hosted on there. That one's clean. That's the one I've been using.
Okay. Yeah, I noticed Mark said he could have used that noise reduction here in George last week on 80 meters. Yeah, Mark, and I could have used it too trying to listen to you. Mark and I are just, I don't know, we're just the right distance away that the group that we'll be talking to, I can hear the other guys, but Mark is just, we can't quite hear each other. We can, but it's so noisy, you have to squint your ears real hard. So...
squint your ears.
Squint your ears. Yes,
that's a technical. That'd be a sight to see. I want when that next time that happens, I want to get a picture of that. I've never seen okay. that happen.
All right.
Sounds painful.
It is, especially for a long period of time.
Yeah,
so, Mark,
I'm sure.
Next time I get over there with y'all, I'm going to do that. I'm going to try and see how it works. And Francis said RN noise would be good for broadcast AM. Maybe. It
for
works.
Static crashes, for sure.
Well, it's not trained on static crashes.
We're going to have to train it for broadcast AM/DXing.
Yep.
Yeah.
So my experience was that I've used RN noise before. If you remember back when we had that eclipse and I did that AM/DXing during the mm-hmm. eclipse, I used RN noise to clean up some of those clips. But it's not really trained on radio interference, so it helped out substantially, but RM noise, the one that was a Windows app, is trained on radio-type interferences and seems to do better. And the version of RN noise that's built into SDR Connect, SDR Plays software, it does extremely good on AM broadcast. I have used it there. Like you can listen to WLS during a thunderstorm and really don't notice it. I mean, it's just that good. Where I was going with that was on AM broadcast, I tried that RM noise, the one that worked the best there. Now, it did not sound good on AM broadcast. It would reduce the noise on it, but it didn't sound great. And that's because it's trained for single sideband at 2.8 kilohertz.
Right. Yeah, that 10.
AM broadcasts a lot wider than that. So it did reduce the noise, but the AM just didn't sound as good. If you try the implementation of RN noise, it's an SDR Connect. It apparently was trained on a wideband AM signals because it sounds great.
So I was multitasking over here. Do you have to change the bandwidth on your filter and your rig to 2.8?
You're supposed to. You can leave it at 3 kilohertz, but it's going to do a better job if you set the filter in your radio for 2.8 kilohertz wide. Put the narrow skirts on it. Don't let it, you know, roll off on the edges. Make it sharp. And turn off any noise reduction that's in the rig. Just let it have clear audio. I did some experimenting with it, and it depends on what you're listening to and also the person you're listening to and how their setup is equalized. If it's somebody using a good microphone and they've got a lot of bass in their audio, it doesn't seem to like that as much as some of the other voices. But changing your AGC speed during a thunderstorm will help it out a lot. Then it recovers real quick from the lightning crashes and does a better job during thunderstorm conditions with a faster AGC. Also, changing your attenuator seems to have some effect on it as well. So it's just, there's variables.
What if we use our little trick, George, where you turn the AF all the way up and use the RF gain?
I have not tested that, Emil, and there's a reason why.
Okay.
All right. When I had the 7700 that Tommy's got now, that's the way I did it, just like you said. I turned the RF gain all the way counterclockwise. I crank up the AF gain, the audio, like almost wide open, and then start backing off the RF gain, and you lose a lot of noise when you do it that way. Mm-hmm. That's the best effect you can do. It is not the same on an SDR.
Okay, yeah.
All right. On the 7760, you've got the RF gain, and yes, it does that same trick, except if you go fully counterclockwise and turn the AF gain up, you hear hiss. And that's because it's not a superhead. It's a different kind of radio. Yep. So what I found is on the SDR, it's more effective to use the attenuator than to use the RF gain. So I will most often in noisy conditions, I'll run my attenuator at 18 dB and I can still hear signals and it's taking the noise way down. And I leave my RF gain right in the middle. I don't do anything with it. So it's just a little different way.
We're learning some things.
We are.
I guess with the RF gain, cutting the RF gain down as opposed to, cutting it down with the attenuator. So you're reducing the signal going into the radio itself. So the radio really doesn't have to work as hard filtering out, noise from signal or signal to noise as much as it would as if there was no attenuation. But that's one thing I found, too, the difference between a superhet radio or receiver as opposed to an SDR. It's different.
Yeah. Yeah, and both of them, you can get the noise out. And a lot of people don't know that trick, but what Emil's saying, use that RF gain and then turn up the AF on a super het, man.
Yeah, it really helps a lot.
Oh, tremendous. Tremendous. Emil's tip there, use a lot of RF gain and turn up the volume on a super het radio. That's going to do you good. But on any radio, slow your AGC down. Put your AGC on slow. Now, if you're missing stuff, speed it up maybe to medium. And you can go fast if you've got like a lot of impulse noise, like lightning or something. But you're going to wear yourself out pretty quick if you're sitting there listening to noise constantly with a fast AGC. It's just not going to
I wore myself out at field day once using an older Super Heterodyne that didn't have any DSP filtering.
Yeah.
And it was so much fatigue at the end of a session compared to the newer rig, which did have DSP in it. It was so nice, night and day difference.
Now, that's one other thing I'll say about the filtering we were just looking at, the RN noise and RM noise. There's a little latency. There's not much on RN noise, because that's happening locally. RM noise, it's taking the signal it captures from your radio, uploading it to a server, and then you get a return signal with the noise filtered out. It's a little latency there. On my rig, it looked like it was around 150 milliseconds, which is fine for typical stuff. You can stand that kind of latency. If you're contesting, maybe something like that, you may not want that latency.
You wouldn't want to use it on field day.
I'm going to find out. I'm thinking probably not.
You want to try it?
I may try it, but I think it's going to put me too late. But sometimes being late replying is better than being spot on the money. It just depends.
Pile up. That's right. You bust the pile up that way sometimes by waiting, huh?
Yeah.
Yep.
And I'll tell you another, I heard some tips discussed at Contest University this year. Run your VFO about 50 hertz off.
Yeah.
And then
I've done that.
You sound so obnoxious that you just stand out from the other folks.
They want to work you to get you out the way.
Yep.
Sometimes in the pileups they're doing that intentionally anyway.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, definitely. So that's a tip you can try. Anyway, I hope to learn some things.
Here's a tip for Emil. Try to talk like a female. Disguise your voice, and you'll break a pile up in no time.
No doubt, Mike. No doubt.
Yep.
This is Emily.
I know I set you up for that.
Mike, you had a news item that you wanted to bring forward tonight. There's been big happenings up there, and I guess that's why you've got your own clock now.
Whoops. Yeah, it only gives one time, and the National Research Council, CHU Canada, which has been broadcasting, I think, from 1923 on the shortwave bands, will stop as of June 22nd, which means after this weekend, it will be no more. It operated for years on around the 80-meter band, the 40-meter band, and the 20-meter band. Giving time signals similar to WWV in Fort Collins, Colorado. So after June 22nd, you won't hear it anymore. So you may want to just, for nostalgic sake, tune in this weekend, even if it's only for a minute or so, and listen to one of the three bands there where it's broadcasting, because come Monday, it's going to cease.
Mike, I got the perfect project for you.
What's that?
What you need to do is go record 24 hours of it.
Oh, and start my own?
Start your own. You've got the timepiece behind you right there.
That's right.
You know, you'll be set up, man. Everybody will thank you.
Now, this image behind me, I just did a quick search for CHU. Broadcast and or the time station, but I can't confirm or deny that this is actually what they're using currently, but it looks kind of simplistic. Obviously, this isn't the cesium clock which is providing the time signal. It must be fed from another source or something, and then of course it goes on to the transmitters from there. But I put a link, and it'll go in the show notes, In the wiki, the Wikipedia page has a pretty good information on the CHU and its history and what it's currently using for equipment and so forth. So, yeah, you might want to check it out.
Cool. Email, with the current weather conditions heading our direction for the rest of the season, you got some tips for us?
You know what, George?
Keep your costs down on them, though.
Yes.
All right. We, you got me thinking. Anyway, you've been talking about testing. I've been talking about testing, and it's all in preparation here for hurricane season for us. So I went ahead and did that hurricane season discount double check. So take a walk with me. Check it out.
Hello, George, Tommy, Mike, Amateurlogic TV viewers. Today was quite the weather event here in Picayune, Mississippi, and it got me to thinking, it's time to check our gear in preparation. So, in preparation for what, you might ask? No, not the 4th of July, but in preparation for hurricane season. Hurricane season's coming up, it's already started, and we've already just witnessed our first deluge from a tropical event in the Gulf of America. So it's definitely coming our way. Might as well take some time to prepare. I always like to start with a good check on the drainage. Make sure nothing's blocking the drainage, nothing clogged it up or is messing with it before we get to the shack. So let's head into the shack. There's something alive in that pond. Gotta watch your six out here. Lots of rain today. Lots of rain today. Let's check things out. No leaks here. That's me carrying a bucket full of water. But we are gonna check some things. In the shack, everything's out right now. The gateway's on, of course. Oh, but we need to check some things out. Make sure our go kit's ready, up to the task, and anything else we got to check out. Plus our antennas. Let's take a look. First would just be a basic station check. I can see the voltage is a little bit high. I can adjust that. But it is showing right about right on the actual meter, a little bit above it. It'll probably come down a bit as it warms up, but I definitely want to make sure the antenna as is working. So that's working on 40 meters, and that's on the HF side in the go kit there. I'm also connected up to the RMS gateway with VHF to the local digipeater and direct to stations like Glenn, KG5CN. So I tested all of that out, make sure that's working. All the pewters are updated, even though that's ever changing, but still, it's got what it needs to have for now. And that's working. So, and we'll check on a few other pieces, parts. Got the voice station, which I'm not testing. I know it works because I was doing ships on the air over the weekend on the antenna rig. So, anyway, let's check some other pieces. All right, got the lithium iron phosphate 100 amp hour battery for the Go kit. See if that's checking out. Certainly is. That charge controller in there keeps it nice and good, as well as I do on the charger. So that's in good standing at the moment. And we got the solar panels ready as well. All feeds back through here. If you remember right from videos way back when, got two power poles, one for the solar controller and the other one for a 12 volt in from the battery. Plus it's got its own power supply in there for AC as well. So that checks out. Let's take another look. We got our bag ready to go here with all the right wires, all the right pieces, parts, cables, USB cables, you name it, is in here to throw in the truck just in case. Got to go somewhere. Got my surge protector in there still. And that'll keep that go kit running with all the right cables that I need and spare parts, etc., along with my Husky bag of antenna and connectors and another power pole type bag from Power Works there. So got some, that's all ready to go. So I got some rope that I always throw in a bag and take with me, throw it in the truck side kits. And that's a G5RV for multi-band operation, some coax, all of this stuff ready to go for the thing. Got some mobile antennas and what have you there. So, and a wheelbarrow full of antenna parts, because, you know, you just can't ever get enough of wheelbarrow. There you go. That's one of the things that started it all. Put those things up in the trees and ready to go. Got to make sure the local VHF, UHF rack and antenna and radio rig here is working with the local nets. I'll be checking into a Aries net in a little bit tonight. But it's always good to check these guys out. KE5QKR. Along with the UHF side as well, KE5QKR. No signal on that one at all, but it's hitting it.
You know, I know it's email traffic and such through amateur radio, but maybe for those that aren't familiar with MeshCore, like myself, you want to give us just a little Reader's Digest version of what it really is?
Roger, MeshCore uses a frequency that is license free, so anybody in the public can get in on it. It does in the 900 megahertz range. It is it sends text messages similar to Twitter.
And there is our own KG5CN helping out the folks with some basic descriptions for anybody who might want to get involved there in the mesh. What a mesh. Way to go, Glenn. Always good to check the voice side of the world too, see which bands are open, and then check them out on the HF rig with the antenna in questions, so I can hear them. I'm hearing them, and I know I'm tuned on making contacts on that band, so that's the voice side checked out. Power's looking good. Things are still there. Next. Of course, one of the other things I like to do is some periodic testing by sending a message out to some of my known contacts out there from a station 300 to 600 miles away. This is like a W0 station. I'll have to take that via Vera FM. Over there, it's always good to test out what you can do with your antenna situation and the known band conditions. So keep all of that intact and test it out periodically during hurricane season. So it's a good thing to do. It's always good to check your communications equipment too, just to make sure nothing's alarming, batteries, etc., just to make sure nothing's out of whack. Well, thank you for taking a walk with me and checking out the equipment, seeing that it's ready for 2026 hurricane season. And it's always good to know the equipment is in working order, at least. You can have some good telemetry on knowing that it's going to work if you need it. So, 73 from KE5QKR.
I was waiting for something nice else to happen.
Where's the Hoyt Clagwell, Oliver Wendell Douglas?
He's at the top.
I want to know what's living in your mini swamp.
I want to know what's not living in there.
Yeah. Yeah, good stuff, Emil. And I notice you've got everything packed up. Is that from the move, or you just always stay that ready to go?
It's slowly starting to unpack as I use things. Unfortunately for me, field day, I'm going to be at a beach vacation, so I'm missing it this year. So some things will stay in those bags that normally come out during field day. So it's getting there as I use it.
So are you carrying a radio to the beach?
I'm pretty sure I'm going to have something. I just don't know what degree of something yet. I better figure it out quick.
Yeah, yeah, you're running out of time. Well, I had one thing tonight I wanted to talk about. You know how I've accused Tommy of having lead acid running through his veins, and he's upgraded to lithium.
Yeah.
But he twisted on my arm a little bit this week on a special battery deal.
It was a bargain, though, man.
Yeah, it was a bargain. I'll have to say, if it lasts any length of time.
It's going to last.
This right here, batteryhookup.com, new overstock 12.8 volt, 12 ampere hour LiFePO4 battery with a BMS. Email, let me know here, $11.
Ching, man. Ching.
Man.
That's cheap.
That is cheap.
I bought two of them, and I didn't even need them.
And I didn't really need them either, but Tommy forced me to buy two of them. So I got a couple of them. Pretty lightweight, man.
Yeah, I capacity tested mine. I got right at a little over 12 amp hours out of it, almost 13.
I need you to capacity test mine.
You got a friend with a capacity tester?
I think I do. I think I might know a guy. But, yeah, I mean, for $11, it's hard to turn it down. It probably burned the house down or something, but
no. It
was a good deal.
It's a brand-new battery. It's just overstocked.
It's a lithium ion phosphate, so
yeah,
they're pretty safe. Yeah.
Yeah.
And like I said, they're brand new batteries. Did you check the voltage on it when you took it out?
Yeah, it was 13.3, I think.
Yeah, that's about where it's supposed to ship. Yeah. About 50-60%.
Yeah. So, going to use them on field day for a little while anyway.
Yep. I'm probably going to use mine and hook them up parallel.
So, anyway, if you think you might be interested in one of those, go to batteryhookup.com, look under lithium, and it's an RB12.
That's actually my go-to place for batteries. They actually have that tester, too. I told Jay in the chat. They got a really good deal on stuff. A lot of it's new. Some of it's used. Most of it's they test it all out. Some of it they don't, and if they don't, they tell you in the description. So, anyway, check them out. That's where I bought stuff when I built my 50-amp-hour battery. I bought it all from there. Pretty good place. The only thing, it takes them a few days to ship your order out, but they ship FedEx, so it only takes 2 days to arrive.
Yeah. I couldn't argue with the price, $22.
When you picked that battery up, George, it looked like it weighed nothing.
It does. It's pretty.
It reminded me of, you know how they have those props in stores?
Yeah.
Cardboard.
That emulate different things? Yeah. Like it looked like you were picking up one of those.
Yeah. Now, Tommy and I were talking about whether you could use one of these things in a UPS. You know, Mike, we had talked about that a while back.
Well, actually, I'm trying. I've had trouble. It depends on the UPS. I bought a bunch of iron phosphate, same form factor, same capacity, and on one of the UPSs, and they're the same brand, APC, it did not want to work at all. I've got a bigger one, which uses multiple, I think they're in series. I think it ends up being like 48 volts. And it's fine. They work fine in that one. But the one that uses a single one, a single 12, it doesn't work at all. Hmm. So I was actually kind of surprised. I don't know why it's not working. I didn't really spend a lot of time trying to figure it out.
Yeah, that was, John, that was batteryhookup.com.
It'll be in the show notes, too.
Field day coming this weekend. Get your gear checked out. Tommy, anything you need to leave the audience with tonight?
Nope. Watch for some field day. I'm not sure what call sign we're going to use. We're going to use the club call.
W5AXC. That's what we've been using.
Yeah, so we'll probably use that, I guess. So we'll post what we're using. So listen for us, and hopefully we can work you on field day.
Yep. We'll be the guys 50 hertz off.
Yeah. or 800 like I was.
So. Yep. Email, any thoughts from down there?
Hey, man, you know, I'm a cheap old man approved. Thanks to Mike.
Approved by yourself. So
my advice is right there.
Keep it cheap.
And I'm going to be cheap for field day.
She won't be here.
You're going to be cheap at the beach? I don't think those two go well together.
Not a problem. No.
Yeah.
You don't want to get sand in your radio.
Yeah. Mike, any conclusion for the night?
What do we got? I'm hoping this cooler weather will stick around for a while. It's been pretty nice after running the air conditioner straight for 2 weeks. We got a reprieve. It's been a week of this nice mid-60s, low 70s weather, cooling right down at night. So. I can only dream.
All right, I guess that's going to do it. We'll be back here for the next Amateur Logic in July.
Well, probably the 17th.
Probably the 17th.
Should be.
Yeah.
We got a Ham College coming up, though.
We do have a Ham College coming up, and I don't know if we've got a date for that. That's probably going to be, the 3rd?
Ooh.
And you're into the general questions pool, aren't you?
Yes, we just started on the general pool. I don't know.
We've already had some good buzzer action.
Yep.
Too, so. Plenty more of that, where that came from, too.
As soon as we've determined the date on that, though, you can find it one of these fine locations right here, facebook.com/groups/amateurlogic.tv, or... Any takers?
Yep. We can follow us on Amateur Logic at Amateur Logic on X, or formerly known as Twitter.
Yep.
Or groups.io/g/amateurlogic.
7-3, everybody.
7-3, everybody. Good night.
7-3.
7-3.